It's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast today with brainy strategies for the international break. Still deciding on your wild card or just tweaking your team? We can help as we discuss Tottenham's Ali. Is 8.4 million a lot of deli bread? Is it time at Man United to field Martial? And at West Ham, is Allaire an Al of a signing? All that coming up and more in this official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello, everybody. Joining us today on the official FPL podcast, we have Julien Laurens back.
Hello, James. Hello, everyone.
Bonjour, Julien. Bonjour. Jeff Dance is in. We could almost say bonjour to you on account of the fact you're Canadian, Jeff.
No, I won't be able to answer back in French, but hi, James.
What you will be able to do is give us some top knowledge of the FPL scene. And we've also got, for his debut, Daniel Story here. How exciting, Daniel.
Nice to see you, James.
How did you do this week, Daniel?
Slightly better than the first three game weeks, which is not a compliment. But yeah, struggling.
Jeff, do you know Daniel? Do you know where he finished last year in FPL?
I've heard.
I think like 5,600th or something.
In the world.
In the world, yes.
That's clearly a fluke, though, seeing where he is now.
All right. Well, how did you do this week, Jules?
I did pretty well. 78 points, which was needed.
Yes.
But I see where Daniel is coming from. My first 3 weeks were not very good.
And yeah,
I
a lot of people
And I almost played my wild card like he already has done.
Right.
And I waited a bit more, and I was right to wait a little bit more.
Wild cards, again, they're a big topic right now. But a lot of people have been struggling, which is why so many have been played. Yeah. Jeff, I know you've played yours, but you've also had a look at what Jules has been doing with his team so far this season. I think you have some pointers.
I did, yeah. He was on in the first podcast we did, and he thought Fornals was going to be a great pick, and he brought Fornals into his team. But Fornals
only... laughing?
Well, Fornals got 3 points in two game weeks, and then
it can happen.
And then Jules realized it was time to move him out.
Fair enough. Who'd you get in?
Yeah,
I think he got Martial in, who got injured in the game week after he was brought back. So that's
Who have you got there now, Jules?
So I kept Martial because I sort of thought and knew that the injury was not a long injury, so that he was going to come back after the international break. So I thought I keep him and use him again instead of transferring him. And then I keep that means I kept another transfer. So I've got two now to use before the next match day, which is
so
good.
So happy for you, Jeff.
To be fair to Jules, he also said Ndombele would do well, and he did. He got a goal and an assist in the first two game weeks. Mm. So it's a bit of a mixed bag there, I think.
Okay. In terms of lessons from game week four and in general from, you know, now that we're in the international break, from the opening four rounds of the campaign, what have you drawn? What have you learnt from all of this, Daniel?
Where I've gone wrong, you mean?
Or lessons that perhaps listeners might appreciate.
I think the standout theme of the season so far is the lack of clean sheets from the big clubs.
Yeah.
Because those premium defenders were there for the two Liverpool players, for example, for Alexander-Arnold and Robertson were there for their attacking and their chance creation, but they were kind of guaranteed clean sheets last season, especially at home. So that's the big factor, whether those premium defenders are still worth it or if no one's going to keep any clean sheets, so you better saving your money for attacking players.
Alexander-Arnold making the case for his inclusion certainly last weekend, even if he wasn't given the goal rather harshly, I felt. What else has stood out for you, Jules, from this weekend or in general?
It's Harry Kane for me, who I was so positive about in the first podcast we did. Usually he struggles to be in August, and he started the season well against Aston Villa. And since then, I think he struggled a bit more. There was that penalty against Arsenal at the weekend, and he hit the post. And I thought Daniel and I were at the game that, you know, the movement was good, but I still feel that compared to others, the Sterlings or Agüero's, for example, or even the Liverpool front three, he's not just up there yet, which is a pattern again, because usually August is a slow start for Spurs and for him. So
you don't feel he's worth that 11 million?
I'm wondering.
Right, because you mentioned, for example, Agüero, who is Mr. Consistent, and I'm stunned that I managed to miss this again at the start of the season. This guy, every single time, does it, and I didn't put him in the team. And he's the only player who's found the net in each of the first four game weeks. Top scoring player in Fantasy Premier League with 6 goals and an assist. Now, Jeff, with all of that, I'm probably going to be cursing myself in a couple of weeks' time because I'm going, yeah, but Gabriel Jesus is going to come back from injury and that's going to restrict his game time and European football starting soon. What do you think?
I think that's valid. Sterling and De Bruyne are the two that I'm going for, but Aguero obviously has that explosive kind of power and he can do anything in any game week. He can score. Kind of like Kane, I think the problem with Kane is that he's so inconsistent. You never know where his hauls are going to come. Mm. So against Newcastle at home, you think, oh, he'll easily do well in that game and then nothing happens. Jesus coming back is a worry, I think. But then there are also other players like Aubameyang who you can kind of switch out. So there are some nice premium options there.
Is one of the lessons of these opening weeks the fact that there's been a shift towards points coming more from forwards than, say, last time around when it was very much a midfield-driven game? The numbers say 11 players have scored three or more goals in the first four game weeks and eight of those 11 are forwards. Last year, it was around half that number.
It's interesting, too, when you look at the price ranges of the people who are getting points. So right. in the forwards, there are a few who are really high-priced who are doing well, but it's often the people maybe in the 6.5 to 7.5 range who are doing well. Pukki, obviously, Abraham, a bunch of other players. And then when you look at the midfielders, there aren't a whole lot of options at 6.5. So there's definitely a switch there.
A couple of other players to mention. Vardy got off to a slow start, but he's now looking very interesting, Daniel.
Yes, he is. He's playing under Brendan Rodgers, which skewed his total from last season. If you look at his points he earned under Claude Puel when there was a fairly obvious breakdown in relationship and under Brendan Rodgers towards the end of the season, he's a new player. It's almost worth completely disregarding his early season form from last season, which skews his numbers because he is, you know, 9 million at the start of the season, I think. He is a guaranteed between 16 and 20 goal a season.
And James, do you have Vardy in your team?
I do have Vardy on my side, yeah.
It's a good pick.
Oh, yeah, that, I mean, it's not.
I wonder why you asked.
You were talking about the quest for under £10 million stars, and in each season there are always a couple of these guys.
Yeah, that's right. There's always two or three players who are, and last season I the reason I did well, I think, is I guessed those correctly.
Who did you have?
I think I had Bernardo Silva very early on, who was the star, never came out of the team. But yeah, this season, Vardy and Kevin De Bruyne were two that I saw picked out as those sub £10 million players. And I'd be surprised if they're not, towards the end of the season, in the top five scoring midfielders and strikers.
Do you think there's a chance that maybe, and hear me out here, Richarlison could be one such player? And what about Tammy Abraham, author of another 13-point haul this weekend?
Yeah, Abraham's the one. Frank Lampard has clearly got a mandate to stick with his youth players, which means that normally with young players in FPL, I think there's a risk that you end up leaving them on the bench because they come on for 10, 15 minutes at a time. Mason Greenwood's the obvious example this season. But with Abraham, he is clearly going to be trusted to not just play games, but play 90 minutes or play 80, 75 minutes a lot.
And interestingly, him and Giroud and Batshuayi were all 7.0 at the beginning of the season. Abraham is up to 7.2 now, but that's off of four goals in two games. The next two games are a little bit more difficult with Wolves away and then Liverpool at home, but then they get really nice for a long stretch. I think he's a nice price there.
Over a quarter of a million managers bringing in Tammy Abraham in the last game week. So a popular choice, but still a very affordable price. If you're curious about how our league is going, and perhaps you'd like to join, listener, if you haven't already, Daniel's right, I won't mention where you are. Jack Lang's number one. Let's just leave it at that in our pundit section. But among all listeners and everybody who's playing within the Fantasy Premier League podcast league, Brian Butler, with his team Butler's Galacticos, is the number one. Well done to you, Brian. If you want to take part and challenge Brian for the top spot, use this code 6QP8QK. All right. There's no fixtures nor deadline for us this weekend. Phew. But there's still a lot we can do with our teams, and we'll be discussing what next in our international break strategies. International break. Back at the start of the season, Jeff, you were saying this is when to play your wild card, but you had already shot your bolt, as it were, in game week three. And the incredible numbers about the wild card this year. One in five have now played already. Uniquely in this room, I think I'm the one in five that hasn't played it. Oh, Jules, have you not played it?
No,
neither?
Not yet.
Okay, so there'll be a lot of listeners out there who are unsure whether to play it or not. What's the advantage to playing it now as opposed to keeping it for an emergency later on?
I think one of the things to remember is that just because you play a wild card doesn't mean you're going to get a boost in your rank. I played mine in game week 3 thinking it was going to be great, and then I had a 2 million game week rank, and then I followed it up with a 5 million game week rank. So
right.
It didn't go as well as it could have for me, but I'm still confident with my team.
But that's also because you're making an investment over the long term, aren't you? And that's, I guess, one of the reasons to play it early is that you make the changes which will, you'll have more game weeks to reap the rewards from that.
Yeah, and I saw some players who were going up in value who I thought were kind of bandwagons who would keep going up in value. So my team value actually is 102.1 right now, which is much higher than many other managers because I got some of the key kind of bench players in early.
The disadvantage, and the reason perhaps, Jules, that you haven't played yours yet, is that not only you figure there'll be an emergency down the line that you're going to need it for, but also the data that you're making your decisions on, at the moment, it's still pretty slender, only 3 or 4 weeks of the season.
That's exactly the reason why I'm waiting a little bit more. I want to see 2, maybe 3 more match days and see what happens then. I don't think I'll wait until the next international break because I fear mid-October would be a bit too late. But I'm still tempted to wait even longer and see where everyone's at, especially in terms of midfielders, I think. Strikers, as we said, I think is... But to find that gem in midfield, that would bring you more points than other, that differential. I think waiting a little bit longer is a good idea.
Daniel, you played yours early, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. and it didn't go particularly well. But I always think, to reiterate what Jeff said about there's no guarantee that a wildcard makes your team better. I think probably down the years, probably 60-40 leans towards making the team better. But you can also give yourself problems because I think the tendency is to make lots of changes because they're free and you figure you might as well. But actually, it might be that just 3 or 4 changes works, but you just don't want to take that points hit.
I see. Have you ever not used your wildcard, Jeff?
No, I don't think so. I always...
Daniel?
I didn't use mine the second half of last season.
That's so flash.
And that went well for you as well.
Yeah.
Don't shame your winning team. That's the key.
For people who are wildcarding, and around 10% of, I think, managers are doing that at the moment, the most owned player in their... fantasy lineups, because they can pick whoever they want, is Timo Pukki, perhaps surprisingly. Big hitters Raheem Sterling and Mo Salah are not far behind, though. If you're not wildcarding, what's the strategy then now that we're in a almost 2-week pause between fixtures about when to make your transfers? Do you go early and catch the price rises, or do you go late and risk international injuries?
Well, once again here, I've kind of gone against the strategy that I would recommend to people. So normally I think that if you have a transfer or two, you should maybe hold it until after the internationals because that there are injuries that can happen in those games. I had 2 transfers and I wanted to get rid of Rashford after he missed that penalty. I just thought it's time to go. And I moved to Allaire from West Ham.
Okay.
So I do have one.
But that's because of price rises and price drops.
It was. And just I was a little bit impatient and just wasn't really thinking straight. I do have one
what
now.
What time of day was it when you made this?
It was actually right after the last game on Saturday.
Okay.
I was watching and I thought,
petulance.
It's just time. I know. It's not what I would recommend. I do have one that I can kind of fix that mistake if it is a mistake.
Okay.
Or if somebody gets injured. But I think that waiting a little bit is probably best.
That's interesting. So if you've managed to bank maybe a free transfer or so, you can go with one early to catch any massively looming price rise and still keep something back for the inevitable South American injury.
Yeah.
In terms of who actually is at risk, I mean, so many times we've seen the likes of Aguero come back from long-haul trips to Bolivia or wherever, not looking ideal for the next game week. The great news for owners and lucky managers that they are of Sergio and indeed Gabriel Jesus is that neither is going to be representing their countries during the international break. And a lot of the African players, I think the African stars won't be called up either because the fixtures there are either friendlies or African Nations Championship games, which Premier League players don't have to be released for. So your Manes, your Salahs are all free of that.
Yeah, but I think if you add as well the Champions League coming in the week after the return of those international players into the Premier League, for managers and for us picking our team, it's a bit of a headache because someone who would have played 2 international games, for example, then comes in, there's the Premier League game at the weekend, and then straight away, Tuesday or Wednesday, there will be a Champions League game for the big club. So often, and we've seen Pep Guardiola doing it a lot before, of really rotating for that first game in the league after the international break, especially, as you said, for the South American players who come from quite far away, in the view of the Champions League coming in straight after.
And one of the players that I'm looking at bringing in is Alexander-Arnold because I think the Liverpool defence, I don't have any right now and I'm looking at getting one, but they, I think, have Newcastle and if he plays both international games, it's Newcastle and then they play Napoli on the Tuesday, I think, and then it's just their games 3 times or twice a week after the international
One of the reasons I have Robertson over Alexander-Arnold, which hasn't actually worked out well so far, is that Liverpool don't really have a backup left-back, whereas they really, in Joe Gomez, they really do have an option at right-back. So if he's going to rotate one of those full-backs, it probably will be Alexander-Arnold, and he's also younger, so probably more liable to that fatigue.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, that as much as we're looking at international fixtures, it's the imminent return of European competition, not just for the Champions League, but especially Europa League, with trips to Kazakhstan for Man United players, that's going to start having an impact, you think, Jules, already from the next game week?
Yeah, although for the Europa League, we've seen a far bigger rotation in the starting 11 from the league team, if you want, to the Europa League team for those clubs like Arsenal last season especially, or even a club like United. You would think that Solskjaer would make the strongest team would play in the Premier League, and a few changes will happen in the Europa League. So, but for the Champions League teams, for sure, like Jeff is saying, you know, would you rest Alexander-Arnold against Newcastle or against Napoli? If he had to miss one of those games, you probably think that Newcastle, he would get the rest, then to have the strongest team possible against Napoli.
And,
so,
and then it's Chelsea after that.
Exactly.
On the next Saturday.
So I think now, when we all look at the Premier League fixtures, which is right before our game, but you also have to include those Champions League matches in between, because that could have a big influence on who plays in the weekend.
Ay caramba. Well, let's have a look at the long-term fixture picture then, with the long view. Okay, the long view. Jeff, you're going to take an extremely long view now.
I am, yeah. So it was announced yesterday that Liverpool and West Ham, who are playing in game week 18, I think, that game has been postponed. So there will be a double game week at some point. It's likely after game week 18 that that game will go in, because there are so many games in December already. So that means that there will be two games for Liverpool and West Ham in a future game week at some point, and no game for them in game week 18.
So Liverpool are flying off to do the World Clubs Cup, or whatever it's called
Club
these
World
days.
Cup.
Club World Cup. But that does mean that somewhere down the line, West Ham and Liverpool will have a double game week. Ooh. In the shorter term, looking at the next six fixtures, and Jules, bearing in mind what you just said about factoring in other teams' commitments, there are clubs who look like they've got really good fixtures coming up Premier League-wise. And I wonder if you could just pick out a couple of players for each that we should really think it might be advantageous to get into our side. Who wants to go first? Daniel.
Yeah, I've picked out Arsenal. They do have Manchester United away on the 30th of September, but the reason I've picked them out is that after their first three Europa League games, they play home games every time against Bournemouth, Palace and Aston Villa, which are gentler fixtures for them. And that's an incredible luck of the draw for Unai Emery to be able to balance both competitions. We've seen
After each one of their Europa League fixtures, they've got a relatively easy
home fixture.
They've
got a relatively gentle home game, yes. And they've got Aston Villa, then Crystal Palace and Bournemouth. So I think it will be interesting to see if Unai Emery plays this front three in all competitions or actually just rotates. And I think Aubameyang is an absolute certain pick for that run.
Interesting. Anybody else from Arsenal that you feel... I mean, where do you stand, for example, on Dani Ceballos?
Well,
now?
The thing with Dani Ceballos is my suspicion is that he is a player who is better to watch as a player and enjoy as a spectator than as a fantasy manager. I don't suspect he's a big points collector. I think he's probably the player that
was against Burnley.
Yeah, but I think he's probably likely to be, to my mind, he looks like a player who will play the pass before the assist, not the assist itself.
A David Silva effect.
Exactly right.
Although David Silva
doing pretty well himself. Yeah.
I would go the same way with Pepe, maybe. I think that he has a lot of potential, but right now it's maybe a little bit too early until we start to see some form. Maybe we wait a little bit and then we see how they do.
Anyone you'd pick out from the Gunners, Jules?
The only issue I have is with Aubameyang playing on that left-hand side, where he'd be far less efficient than if he was playing in the centre. And we saw that on Sunday when he scored as soon as he replaced Lacazette as a centre forward.
So who would you pick out, if anyone, from Arsenal?
If the front three plays every Premier League matches, Lacazette surely will have more chances and would be in a better position to score more goals than Aubameyang. Mm. As great as a finisher Aubameyang is, but on the left-hand side, he's obviously, by definition, a bit more restricted. Mm. However, as we saw against Liverpool, for example, Lacazette might not always play that centre-forward role, and Aubameyang then, obviously, would be, like Danny rightly said,
Lacazette
right
also is 9.4, which is a lot more reasonable for our teams than Aubameyang's price.
That's very true. What if we were to pick an Arsenal defender? And I know, I mean, I've seen them play as well, but with Kieran Tierney coming into the picture, with Bellerin coming into the picture, those are players who surely must offer low ownership at high returns.
Yeah, I mean, Tierney is the one who I think in real terms transfer fee, I think, has been underrated. And I think the same is probably true of his fantasy value. I think he's a great pickup at that price. He is potentially what Andrew Robertson is for Liverpool in terms of that surging left-back that crosses into the box and creates things. The only slight doubt is if one of Aubameyang or Pepe, whoever plays on that left, there's going to be less overlapping than if that was an Alex Iwobi last season. And there's going to be less tucking inside and overlapping, I think. But yeah, I think Tierney's a great pickup.
I think formation there is interesting as well. How are Arsenal going to fit all of these attacking players in? Are they going to go to a back three with David Luiz there? Is Tierney actually going to be out wider and maybe pushed even further forward? Or are they going to stick with the back four? It's unclear right now, I think.
But anyway, Arsenal, there are some prospects there, but I wouldn't say much unanimity of players to pick out from them. So moving down other teams with great fixtures coming up, Man City are in there. Actually, they're going to be playing three of the bottom four sides in the Premier League in the next four game weeks. Now, in amongst that, they've got a trip to Shakhtar Donetsk in Ukraine in the Champions League. They've also got Preston in the League Cup as well. But Man City, I mean, they're fixture-proof, aren't they? One question about them, Jules. Laporte, who a lot of people had for the clean sheets, is now out for how long?
We don't know yet.
A
for
long
sure.
time.
Yeah, he had successful surgery on Wednesday.
Who comes in for him for City, do you think? And could they be a cheap route into that fearsome back line?
Yeah, I mean, Fernandinho obviously was the one who came on at the weekend to play in quite an unusual role for him in that centre-back. Although he can play there, I'm not sure he could play often and I'm not sure how good he's going to be. And obviously the Stones
are tremendous. He's 5.3. The fact that he's a midfielder, how does that affect clean sheet points?
Well, he only gets one clean sheet, yeah. 1 point for the clean sheet.
So that's not so exciting.
That's not so sure. That might be Pep's choice. Surely it won't be our choice. Otamendi and Stones, if both fit, are obviously the partnership that I think will play regularly for City. But it's a difficult one. And I think people should look at other options outside of City to replace Laporte if you have him in your team.
I was going to say, I think it strengthens the case for Alexander Zinchenko, actually. Because Laporte potentially could have played left back or could have played kind of left of a three in defence and if they wanted to bolster the midfield. But without Laporte, I think Zinchenko plays every game on the left now.
If you're looking at other options, how about looking at Burnley, Jeff?
I do think Burnley have some really nice fixtures coming up. So I think they have one of last season's top six in the next 10 game weeks, which is amazing.
And it's Chelsea, who are not exactly impregnable.
Exactly. So Barnes is a pretty clear one, I think. He's the fifth highest scoring forward. He's got four goals now in four games. I like Pope as a goalkeeper. He is 4.6 now, but that still provides really nice value. And there are a few midfielders in there who you could look at as well in that difficult kind of 5.5 to 7.5 midfield range.
What about Tarkowski?
He's an option, just Peters as well. I don't think they're going to get a whole lot of clean sheets, but I think that there is some potential there. I would look at Loughton as well, actually, if you're looking for Burnley defenders.
Okay, how much is he?
4.5.
4.5, very reasonable. And those fixtures, Brighton away, Norwich at home, Villa away, Everton at home, Leicester away, Chelsea at home. So no easy games at this level, of course. But the fact that you've not got any European action in there muddying the waters hopefully should help things. Did somebody mention Spurs as having propitious fixtures on the way, Jules?
Indeed, it's me, James, because they have a very interesting run of games coming up, although the Champions
Palace
League...
Palace at home, Leicester away, Saints at home, Brighton away, Watford at home, Liverpool away. That last one aside, that's pretty tasty.
Yeah, and then they will have Olympiacos away in the Champions League in between and Bayern Munich at home, and then Red Star Belgrade at home. So they've got two of their first three Champions League games at home, which is obviously good because less travelling. And we saw against Newcastle when they got beaten that playing at home was not always the answer for them, because against a low block, when there's not much space for the forwards, they might find it a bit more difficult. However, Eriksen is pretty much back in now.
When you say low block, you mean what, teams that defend deep?
Yes, teams that defend deep and don't leave much space for either the fullbacks to go forward or more creation. However, Christian Eriksen is not certain to stay and will be back, you would expect, regularly now in the starting 11, bring more creativity. Giovanni Lo Celso, at some point, will get fitter and also bring that creativity. And Son, who for me could be the differential because not many people have picked him because he's been suspended and now he's coming back. He was interesting against Arsenal for a first game in the league this season. Obviously, he was at the start of the first goal. So between Eriksen and Son and that very good run of of games coming up for Spurs, I think there's something interesting to do there. And then Dombele will be back as well after the international break.
Yeah, and Son's ownership is only 2.5%, which is really very low.
Wow, what's his price?
He's 9.5, so I think that if he gets his starts, which he should, then he'll continue, he'll kick on.
The other player we haven't mentioned is Dele Alli, who came on against Arsenal in the North London derby, and who, you know, two seasons ago, I remember, was kind of the cert pick in midfield. I think he was at like 8.5 million and got a huge, huge number of points. If he can get it right.
Do you think he can, though?
Well, I think Spurs will get better. I asked Pochettino after the game on Sunday, and he said, this European transfer window has destroyed the start of our season. It's taken the focus of players off the pitch. Yeah. That ending, he believes, will instantly make Spurs better and instantly will make them, you know, a more attacking, free-flowing team. So this could be the time to pick up Spurs players.
I'd love to see his fancy lineup. By the way, Eriksen, hands up. Who has that relationship with him whereby every time you bring him in, he gets nothing, you get rid of him, and he does a run of games with points? It's everyone, isn't it?
That's how I feel about Kane as well.
Oh, is it?
Because
okay.
I feel that I get Kane in for Newcastle, or I get Kane in and I think he's going to do really well, and then he doesn't, and then he gets a penalty or scores a few in a game that I don't expect he would. And I know, Daniel, you sold Kane for Aguero, which was a great move. I guess that means that you think Aguero's a better option going forward than Kane.
My only great move, it should be said, but yes.
And Jan Vertonghen, now he's back in the team, and right. I think he's sorted out all the issues that he's had with Poch in the start of the season, so you could expect him now to play regularly, which obviously before the Arsenal game he hadn't done at all.
Okay, didn't work out too well with him in the starting lineup against Newcastle, but after the international break, going forward, things more settled, could be a very different fixture for Spurs. All right, still to come on the show, we're going to be looking at your questions, and the boys are going to be picking out one player who they think over the next month or so could be a really, really important asset to have in your fantasy sides. Love getting your questions in via Twitter here at the FPL Pod. Use the hashtag FPL Pod, like Andrew Lang did when he asked us. This season, there seemed to be a lot of choice when it comes to enablers, to wit, cheaper players who enable you to spend your money on other big-name stars. Says Andrew, though, what are the pros and cons in using too many? Jeff?
I think it all depends on if they're performing or not. So if you have a player like Cantwell, who has done really well this season, has two assists and a goal in the last three game weeks, then yes, he's an enabler, but he's actually going to be starting for your team and there isn't much risk. It's when those players start not performing that you have a worry there. So if you have Cantwell and maybe Dendonker and Greenwood, and all of a sudden they are starting but only getting 2 points every week, then you're kind of stuck because it's difficult to get money in to upgrade them.
How many enablers is too many? I say this because I know somebody wildcarded and basically got Aguero, Kevin De Bruyne, Salah and Sterling, and whatever money they had left, they just basically filled their squad up with the cheapest players.
We're all tempted to do that every time.
And I'm thinking, is that actually brilliant or stupid? And I don't know what the answer is.
I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah. Really.
Okay, there's no proportion of a team that you would give over to. I mean, I in my squad, for what it's worth, I would think maybe two of those kind of players.
I usually go for a quite cheap defender, and I kind of have them last on my bench. So Lundstrom was going to be that, but then he's been really good in playing in midfield, so he's actually moved up to maybe the fourth spot for my defenders. So I think it depends on your team structure a little bit. Definitely having one in your front eight players who's cheap isn't too much of a risk, and then one in defence as well. But when you get into three or four, then that starts to be a little bit of a worry.
I see.
I think in general, this season more than any other, that players from promoted clubs have been undervalued. I think that this season, the promoted clubs not just will do better than they have in recent seasons, but also look more intent on attacking and scoring goals, which makes those midfielders and strikers maybe a little bit better value than they would have been. Most of them are available at similar prices to backup players at mid-table teams, which seems foolish.
Sumesh Dahal's got a question. Best £6.5 million midfielder. Sumesh offers these options. Lanzini. Ooh. McGinn. Yep. Ceballos. We talked about him already. And that Mason Mount out of Chelsea. Lanzini's really interesting.
Yeah. I would or go not. Lower than that. I've got a £6 million. I like Harry Wilson at £6
million. Okay.
Taking every
at Bournemouth.
Yeah, taking every free kick, shooting from range, creating as well for one of the best strikers in the league in Callum Wilson. So I think
is he this year's Ryan Fraser?
Yeah, well, he could be. He certainly will take responsibility from Ryan Fraser, yes.
Right, interesting.
When Brooks is fully fit, it'll be Fraser, Brooks or Wilson for only two positions. So you do wonder who Eddie Howe would pick between those three. But you would think if King and Wilson play up front, there's only two spaces for those three.
Fair enough then on Wilson. But does anyone share my enthusiasm for Manuel Lanzini? 6.5 million, supplied 14 key passes so far. It's the second most this season behind Kevin De Bruyne.
He's up there. The reason these players are priced where they are is because there's some risk there. So do you want to go with Mason Mount or maybe Tammy Abraham, who's also cheap? If you're paying $6 million, you're not going to get a player who returns every single week. So you have to be okay with that to some level. But I think Lanzini's a great pick. Mount will be a good pick when the next two fixtures pass, potentially. And McGinn is good as well. One thing that I look at is if I had maybe Allaire from West Ham, then maybe I don't want to get Lanzini as well because I don't want two players from that team. But I think that having two players can be a big differential, and that can really push you up the ranks if they do well.
On that note then, Jeff, let's finish off today by just quickly getting a name from you each of a player who you think over the next month or so of the season could prove a really valuable asset, but that is low ownership. Daniel?
I was going to say Jamie Vardy as my top pick, but we've discussed him earlier. So
he's still under 10% ownership.
Yes, but at 1.8% ownership and 5.9 million, Alex Iwobi at Everton, who scored
good pick
against Wolves and will be one of their creators with Richarlison back in form. I like that one.
Wow, that's a top one, isn't it? Julien?
I go for Sébastien Haller, not just because he's French, although that's a big part, but very strong in the last two games, 13 yeah. points and 8 points. He's got 23 points already. For someone who's discovering the league, you know, he's very good. The game's coming up again, Aston Villa against Man United at home, which is a game that you could see West Ham winning and him doing really well.
He's got Lanzini supplying the bullets.
So that's my next point. It's not just that. Oh. It's that he's got Felipe Anderson, Yarmolenko, and Lanzini, who are all creators.
Where was Fornals?
Yeah, but no,
so quickly he's forgotten.
Pablo, who? No, nah. Just don't bring Fornals in. No, but if you think about Aubameyang, Lacazette, and Pepe, will share goals. Same with the City attackers. Same with the Liverpool front three. At West Ham, Haller is your goal scorer, and he will have loads of chances created by Yarmolenko, Felipe Anderson, and Lanzini, who are more creators than finishers. So I think, for me, he's a really good pick at 7.5 million.
7.5 million. I'm wildcarding. That's what's going to happen. Jeff.
I convinced you that. Yeah. I love that.
Jeff.
I mean, jumping on that as well, I brought Allaire in already this week, so I think that's he's a great pick. My pick is Anthony Martial. I know that he has a flag right now because he may be injured, but I think he'll be back after the international break. He is 7.7 million. He's only owned by 8.7% of managers. And if he's playing up front for Manchester United, that is a great option. He's out of position, so even though he's a midfielder, he's playing in a forward position. He gets more points per goal.
Plus, does he get to take the spot kicks now after recent controversies?
Who knows? I mean, one of the reasons I got rid of Rashford is because I was just so frustrated right. with the penalty situation. Okay. I hope Martial gets them.
Luckily, we've still got another week to implement whatever changes we're going to make to our teams. So, listener, enjoy your weekend off. We'll be back here next time around, same place, same time, to aid you with your decisions. For now, it's many, many thanks to Jeff Dance, to Julien Laurens, and Daniel Story for being with us. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll catch you next time.